What's up, y'all? This is Rommel Watley, and welcome to Truckin' Hustle, the podcast for trucking entrepreneurs. If you want to learn about the trucking industry from the business side of things, you're in the right place. Every week, I interview the people who are making it happen on a daily basis. I get them to share their successes, their failures, and sometimes even their secrets. The goal is to show you how you too can create financial freedom in the booming trucking industry. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show.
For Synergy Logistics, we broke 20 million, right around 25 million. Our main bread and butter is frozen LTL.
So you started with one truck, one trailer as well?
One truck, one trailer on the road. We originally had a Volvo VNL 780, I think it was, and off we went to the races and started learning the business. We were able to kind of develop our business by getting those owner operators to lease on us versus us having to go and buy the trucks and put them on the road. And in that moment, I remember it was like, how are we ever going to come out of this?
Yeah.
How much did they owe you? Back? At that time, they owed us about... Industry's not going anywhere. It's just got to get through this rut, and you know, things are going to get better, and the future looks bright. If you're going to get into this industry, my advice is...
All right, Hustle Fam. We are back with another amazing episode, and today I am joined by Mr. Tim Artem, live from Chicago, Illinois.
That's correct?
Man, it's a lot of freight in Chicago. What's that about? What's up with all the freight in Chicago?
Chicago's the home of the freight. I mean, it's when you go back into the history of the city, that's kind of where everything came in from, all the farms and everything around us and the railroads, and we've just kind of developed like that. The whole half of the city is just basically designed to support freight.
Yeah, for sure. So are you in Chicago?
We are.
Okay, good. Synergy Logistics.
Mm-hmm.
You guys have been in business for how long?
We've been in business since 2007, so 17 years.
Man, 17 years, you're an OG, man. You made it. Congratulations.
We made it.
So you've seen the ups and downs,
mm-hmm.
You know, different markets and so forth and so on. So, you know, this current condition isn't really new to you.
No, we've gone through it during a 2009 recession and ups and downs, but this one's definitely off the scale.
This one is down.
Yeah, this one's down.
Got it. All right, let's talk about it. So let's put it in context. What is Synergy Logistics?
Sure. So Synergy Logistics is a freight brokerage in Chicago, Illinois, that focuses on frozen and refrigerated LTL.
Okay, got it. So you're a freight broker, a freight brokerage, and you have a niche of frozen and refrigerated.
That's right.
LTL. Okay, got it. And how did you get into the industry?
So originally when we got into the industry, we had trucks and we had owner operators leased onto us, and we had a company truck and we had a carrier MC, and then we had a broker MC, and then we just kind of focused more on the brokerage than we did on developing the trucking company. And then about 5 years ago, we gave up the trucking company and just focused more on the brokerage. So on the south side of Chicago where our terminal's at, we have a 10-acre facility down there, about 60 dock doors, and we just basically focus on consolidating LTL and building good truckloads out of Chicago.
Got it. So you said you have a partner?
Well, I have a bunch of people that I work with that are real close with me. Okay. I have Chris and Andre and Cheryl, and the team's been working with me for a long time.
So let's go back to the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
2007, you said?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Tell me about that. What were you doing prior to getting into this space?
So before this, actually, I was in the military. I was in the Marine Corps.
Okay.
And I was kind of...
Hoorah.
I was in basically transportation in the Marine Corps. I was a driver in the artillery. And then I got out and got a job with a company called PowerPlate. And I got a job in customer service and logistics. And then a good friend of mine, Chris, came up to me and was like, hey, we should get into trucking, this, that, the other. So we did. And now we're off to the races. And here we are 17 years later. We're all still working together. Me, Chris, Andre's been with us since 2011. And the rest of the team is real close in the team to push through all these years of hauling freight.
Yeah, got it. How was getting into trucking in 2007? What the landscape look like?
So in 2007, it was great. I think it was 2008 going into 2009. It was hard.
Got it.
So we originally had a Volvo VNL 780, I think it was, and off we went to the races and started learning the business. And when we got to 08, 09, kind of the only thing moving was refrigerated and frozen freight. So we kind of pivoted and got into that, and then kind of started learning the market. Chicago was big on that. There's a lot of produce coming in. There's a lot of food coming in. So we kind of just developed from that and grew our business in that department and kind of gave up the dry for a while. Now we do some dry. We definitely do some dry brokerage. We're set up with the post office and a whole bunch of other accounts. But our main bread and butter is frozen LTL.
So you started with one truck, one trailer as well?
One truck, one trailer on the road.
And it was a reefer trailer?
Originally it was a dry box, and then we bought a reefer trailer in 08, 09.
So you started seeing that there's an opportunity there for you guys in the frozen sector. So you got the reefer trailer, 08, 09.
Uh-huh.
And tell me about how you grow that business from one truck to what?
So I think at our peak we were probably about 25 trucks. And we just started networking, getting more owner-operators to come on board with us. We liked the owner-operator model more than we did owning the truck, so we were having guys lease onto us.
Why?
Well, because I felt like it put more of the responsibility of the maintenance of the truck and the ownership of the truck on the driver, and I think the drivers that we would get were more able to haul LTL for us coming out of Chicago with those multi-stop loads. So we were able to kind of develop our business by getting those owner-operators to lease on us versus us having to go and buy the trucks and put them on the road. And then eventually a lot of the owner-operators that hauled for us, we just gave them their own authority. They went out and got their own authority, and then they just continued to haul our loads, which is why we ended up with a brokerage.
Got you. So you continue to grow, and you really focus on the frozen right?
Yeah. Okay. I'd say we're probably about 90% frozen.
Okay. And I'm talking about back then now at this.
Now. We're developing. So, you know.
Developing and growing. Okay. Mm-hmm. Tell me about some of the struggles in growing the trucking company, man.
So I'll tell you, there's a ton of struggles in our industry. And a lot of them, it's, you know, finding the right finance partner. A lot of them is finding the right space, getting the right facility in place, getting the right team to make sure that all the freight's going to get where it needs to go and things don't end up in different parts of the country that are not supposed to be. And getting really, really, really good drivers that want to do business with you month after month, load after load.
Yeah. All right. So you scale the company through owner-operators.
Mm-hmm.
You said at your peak, you're probably at about 20, 25 owner-operators, somewhere around there.
Uh-huh.
And then you say you open up the brokerage. So you do this in tandem. Tell me how that kind
of worked. So what we were doing is we would load up our guys, and then we would broker off what our guys didn't want, right? And then we just kind of realized, like, let's just broker everything. And our guys went and got their own authorities and opened up their own companies, and then a lot of them still do business with us. We have drivers that own their own carrier authority that have been driving with us for 17 years.
Mm, got you. All right. So you go full-fledged into the brokerage, and now you kind of, you just sell off the trucks? What happens with the equipment that you have? How many trucks do you have? Because you said you had owner-operators, and you had some of your own trucks.
Yes. So you know what? With some of them we sold. Some of them we turned into paperweights and ended up just kind of scrapping part by part. And, you know, everybody that kind of needed a part off of a truck took it, and then off it went into like a, yes, I don't want to say a salvage, but you know what I mean, a distressed truck sale, right? That's kind of how we kind of disassembled that. So a few of them got sold immediately, and some of them stuck around, you know, because our owner operators had all Volvos and stuff. And then we got basically, you know, got rid of the carrier authority and just ran with the brokerage.
Okay, got it. So what year was this when you went full-fledged brokerage?
I'd say it was probably, I think it was 2017 or 18 that we gave up the carrier authority, but we were dwindling down the carrier authority well before that and putting all our power into the brokerage. So I'd say probably if I had to put a real number on it, it was about 2015.
Okay, so around 2015.
Mm-hmm.
What was the major shift just in thinking at that point, like when you go from a carrier asset base to now you're a full-fledged brokerage? Just tell me about how you just approached the business differently, because you had been, you know, operating as a carrier for so long. Mm-hmm. So what was like your business model? What was your plan? What were you guys thinking that you were going
to
do?
So in that sense, what we wanted to do was make sure that all the carriers that we had got set up on their own authority and would continue to do business with us. We made sure that the carriers that we were brokering freight to had the highest priority within our company, because we wanted to make sure that we wouldn't lose them to other people. So we put a lot of focus on our relationships, and we put a lot of our focus on making them independent and letting them own their own company and feel like they have a slice of the pie and do better. Because when they do own their trucks and they do own their equipment, they feel better, right? Because they're actually owning a part of the whole transportation piece, right? So it worked out well, and a lot of the guys are still hauling with us today.
Yeah, so I mean, it's kind of like, it's a cheat code, because they're kind of like your guys still. Because you're kind of cultivating them, you're developing them, and you're kind of helping them gain their own independence, right? But at the same time, now you have loads for them, right?
Right.
They have their own authorities, they have their own trucking companies, and now you guys go full-fledged into the brokerage, and now you have freight for at least 20-something guys. You know you have that carrier pool,
right?
Access to them at all times.
Them, and then it's grown since then.
And it continues to grow after that.
And that's the most important thing, because then when you're doing a multi-stop load for a customer, and you know that this guy's capable of doing it, and he's going to do a good job week after week, then your customer is going to give you that freight, even though other brokers are trying to undercut you.
Yeah.
Because what are the other brokers going to do? Take a multi-stop load and throw it up on the load board and see what happens.
Right.
And that's where things can get really complicated. And customers that have an LTL, you know, they're developing a product. They don't have a truckload yet to ship. But their customer demands that product to be delivered at a truckload rate almost, you know, like on a sale out of Chicago on a Monday and be in New York the next day. He can't do that with LTL. But right. We can do that.
Right.
We can provide a predictable sailing schedule for our customers, because we know that the carriers that are going to haul for us, we can rely on them.
Yeah, got it. So LTL, less than truckload, for people who may not be familiar, anybody watching this video, explain to me, because like you said, it is like a different monster, because it's not like one pick, one drop. These guys have multiple stops and you know, like partial loads that they're building. Kind of explain to me how you have to go about that as a broker, and how that is different from like other types of, you know, freight out there.
Sure. Well, it's a lot more complicated, because we have to basically design a load, right, and make sure that it's going to deliver okay, and make sure that all the times kind of work out. And then
can you expound on that when you say design a load? So what would that look like in real time? Like what does a design load look like?
So a design load would be one where we're taking a whole bunch of partials. Right. And then when we are designing the load, we got to make sure that those partials make sense geographically before we sell the load off to a carrier.
Okay.
Because a carrier who may be looking at that load, if there's a stop in Virginia, but then, you know, they got a dead leg to their next, they're not dead leg, but their next stop is in Florida, they may look at that and go, you know what? That's too far. The mileage doesn't pay. I'm going to be dropping this here, but I got to go so many miles to my next stop. You know what I mean? It's going to take too much time. So we kind of have to design put the freight together in a way that it's going to sell well on the you know, to our carriers.
And how do you put the freight together?
So that's
there
where
must be like art to that, right?
There is an art to it. Yeah, it's our team that is really good at that. A lot of it is not so much software based. It's just repetition and kind of in their head. They know what guys like what freight, and they know how to put it together to make it pay well, deliver well, and get off well. Because, you know, a lot of times in the refrigerated industry, when you get to a receiver, you may end up there for 10 hours.
Yeah.
And that could ruin the whole chain.
For sure. So give me an example of what like an ideal route would look like for you, if you could just put one together in your head. What would the commodity be? Where would you be traveling from? Like the origin is here. Like just give me an idea what that would look like.
So most of our loads are going to origin out of Chicago, and then they're going to go towards the Eastern Seaboard. So that's where most of our routes are. So you come out of Chicago, you'd maybe have a drop in Ohio, a drop in Philly, maybe a drop in Pittsburgh somewhere, final out in Kentucky, and then, you know, find your way back to Chicago and set up with us for the next week.
Okay, got it. And typically, how far in advance are you getting your freight? Do you have like dedicated shippers that you work with all the time, or tell me how that looks?
Yeah, so we do have dedicated shippers, but the freight changes every week depending on what their POs look like for the week. So we may get 4 pallets from this customer, which we're used to getting 6, or we may get 3 versus 5. And that's where, you know, some weeks are heavier than others, but we make it work.
Got it. And what type of stuff are you guys moving? Is food? What type of things are you
moving?
Food.
All food, mainly what's in your grocer's freezer.
Okay. Got it. So all food products. And like you said, multi-stop loads.
Mm-hmm.
And you said you do Chicago to the Eastern Seaboard.
Eastern Seaboard.
Okay. Got it. Tell me about growing the brokerage. What were some of the struggles that you had in the beginning, and how did you overcome them? And what are like some tips that you could give to anybody who wanted to, you know, get into the brokerage industry, especially within your niche?
So getting into our industry is a long-term commitment. I think that's really the only way to make money. I think what kind of ruins our industry is people who get into it who aren't going to be around in 5 or 10 years. They're just looking to make a quick buck because they heard that there's money to be made in logistics.
Hmm.
So if you're going to get into this industry, my advice is stick around for a while and plan to make money over a long period of time. You're going to see some spikes. You're going to see some downs, but you have to just push through those. I think what we're seeing now with the freight recession is a result of everybody getting into our industry a few years ago.
Yeah. As a broker, how do you approach like pricing your loads and making sure that you're giving your carriers a fair price and making sure that you're able to make your margin? And how do you train your salespeople to sell?
So when we sell based on service. We sell based on the reality that we're going to make sure that this load gets delivered. We have relationships with our carriers, and it's going to go. We know that our competition can provide a cheaper price, but you may be up all weekend wondering if that freight is actually going to get picked up and delivered. On the flip side, we have to make sure that our carriers are taken care of. Otherwise, they'll go somewhere else. So sometimes we don't make money on freight, but we move it just to kind of keep the thing rolling. And so it's important to understand as a broker, sometimes you lose money, sometimes you don't make money, and sometimes you do make money.
Yeah.
But it's okay because you're here for the long term. If I get a carrier that I'm not okay with making money on and I got to keep, you know, making my 10, 15 points on it, well, guess what? Eventually he's just going to go, I'm going to go somewhere else, right? I'm going to look for a different opportunity. But there's going to be weeks where the freight comes up and the freight goes down and the freight's just average. But we're going to make money because we're going to be working together for a long time. That's why a lot of the guys stick with us because we can provide that stability over 10 or 15 years where they know that the lows won't be as low and maybe the highs won't be as high, but you know what I mean? You'll be hauling every week and doing well.
Got it. And you said you have a warehouse as well, right?
We do.
Multiple warehouses or just
one? We have one.
Okay, and how big is the warehouse?
So it's about 60 dock doors.
60 dock doors.
Mm-hmm.
Tell me about how that happened. At what point in the business did you guys say, okay, we need a warehouse now? And tell me about that transition.
So when we originally, it was about 2011, 10, we started doing more LTL than just one pick, one stop stuff. So we wanted to get into a terminal. We got down on Cicero and 47th, basically, right in the south side of Chicago over there. And we moved our offices there, and we started growing into this terminal that was a multi-tenant terminal. And we just kind of kept growing and taking more and more and more of the space. And now here we are about almost 15 years later, and you know we've got the majority of it.
And it's a refrigerated warehouse, obviously, right?
So we have a refrigerator in there. It's not a completely refrigerated warehouse, but
okay.
We'll do some like short-term holds and stuff like that. And a lot of cross-dock work, too, now.
Okay, so you don't necessarily use a warehouse for the frozen stuff. It's just other warehousing that you do, other
products. Right. And so it's not necessarily for like what you would consider like a cold storage.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
Yeah, it's more
it
just in transit stuff. So we'll have carriers that'll come to us and be like, hey, I need to drop off these pallets for a few hours and go do a pickup. And then, you know, we'll load it on and off of them. And then we'll do cross-dock work as well for a bunch of carriers that we work with.
Okay, got it. Tell me about the warehousing business, man. Was that something that when you guys got into it, it was automatically profitable or did it take some time to build up? Tell me that story.
I don't think anything that's immediately profitable lasts a long time. You just got in at a high moment.
Right.
So, you know, it was tough. Warehousing is its own, you know, cross-docking is its own thing over there. You got to make sure you have the right drivers. You got to make sure you have the right systems in place to make sure that the pallet that you're putting on a truck is supposed to go on that truck and not on the truck that's going to the other side of the country, because that could be really costly. And so it takes some time to develop the right flow.
So it started out as an office space for you.
Like, it started off as
did you go in there with the intention on it, like on doing like the warehousing, or was it more like we're gonna move in here and then we start like saying, hey, this is a big warehouse, let's take some space.
Originally it was like, this is cool, we'll have some access to some forklifts and stuff if we need to move freight around, and then this is a cool office and we're right here in the heart of the trucking industry in Chicago, so let's do it. And then from there it kind of just developed, and our business developed, and we needed more of the space, and off we go.
Got it. So how did you start looking for other people to utilize your warehouse space? Like, how did you start selling the space and how did you start growing the warehouse business?
Well, so the warehouse business is more just for short-term holds. So we don't do like just really long storage or anything like that. So if we're going to bring your freight into our terminal, like we're pretty much going to be shipping it. We're going to be brokering the freight off. So that's kind of how we worked. And it worked well because some of our customers during the peak during COVID, when everybody was looking for warehousing space and all of a sudden transit space mattered, it helped a lot.
Yeah. So it's just like for cross-docking.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, got it. All right, so what percentage, that's not the majority of your business. So
no.
Your business is more so the brokerage side.
Yes.
Okay, got it. So in growing the brokerage, tell me like some of the tricks of the trade, man. Like, what are some of the the skills that you've learned over the years in order to grow and be a successful brokerage?
So in the beginning of any freight brokerage, it's all about establishing relationships, right? And you got to take those risks. You got to put your freight on people that you don't know that you get off of the load boards. But then what's most important is developing the relationship so that you can actually feel comfortable with the freight that's out there. That takes time, but I don't know any other way around it. You know what I mean? You just got to kind of go, you do all your vet checks, you do all, you know, all the software that's out there and everything on all the load boards. But eventually you got to focus on developing those relationships because that's what we sell. We sell relationships.
Got it. Now, when you built the brokerage, did you start in sales? Were you like one of the sales guys, or were you more like?
I was dealing with carriers and I was dealing with customers. We were all kind of wearing all the hats at the time.
Okay. Now, what's your role? What do you do primarily?
So I'm the president of the company, and I'm the guy. I like to say that I'm at the top of the hill that throws the ball down and runs to the bottom, waits for it to run me over.
Okay.
So I'm.
What does that mean when you say that?
I got my hand in almost everything over there. Everybody's got their hand in everything. We're running around. We're growing. It's an exciting place to be. There's a lot of development, and even in these rough times that we're in as an industry, we see it as an opportunity. So everybody's kind of involved in every department, just, you know, helping out and developing the business.
How many people do you have there now?
So just in the offices, we've got probably about 25, and then, you know, our dock workers and so on and so forth.
Okay, and that's like sales for the most part, the 25?
So I wouldn't say sales, because once we kind of get a customer, it's more about load relationship and dealing with our carriers.
Okay, got it. All right, talk to me about training for like how you train your guys. Like, what is the when you're training new brokers? Do you handle that, or is somebody else in charge of like the training aspect?
No, that Chris would handle that. Okay. Basically, when our new people are onboarded, what's important for us for everybody to kind of have an idea of how all of our departments work.
Yeah.
So we don't isolate our guys and be like, all right, you're in the brokerage side, so you're going to focus on the sales side of the brokerage. You're not going to understand the carrier side of it or the finance side of it or this and that of it. So our guys are pretty well rounded within the company, but when we onboard them, it's most important to make sure that they understand our culture and they understand our expectations, and that they really want to be here for a long time.
Mm.
Because, you know, if you're here because you heard it was a good industry to get in, then there's quick money to be made, it may not be right now, but it'll be there eventually.
Do you look for brokers with, like, their own book of business, or do you like to get, like, new guys who are just kind of fresh in the industry and, like, kind of train them up in the way you guys do things?
Either or. We have some seasoned guys that have come in with their book of business, and that's helped great. And, you know, we don't want people that rely on their book of business. We want to take their book of business into ours and then basically develop everybody's book of business. So we don't want it to be like, this is my work and this is my customer. We want you to be a part of our team.
Yeah.
And then the younger guys that are looking to develop their book of business and develop and grow, it's a great place to be, because you're not just on the phone, as they say, the phone and fax, right? You're actually like load planning, you're dealing with carriers, you're doing a whole bunch of other stuff that you maybe wouldn't be doing in a regular brokerage.
Got it. How has the current economy, like this past year, it's been brutal for everyone. How has that impacted your business?
Well, I think everyone in the industry has been impacted one way or another. So the adaptability of us is what's really helped us persevere through these times, which is, you know, we haven't gotten into this yet, but we also have Synergy Funding, which is our factoring company. And obviously that's taken a, you know, it's taken a hit because our carriers have taken a hit across the board. And so we're constantly kind of shifting between the two, making sure that we can do what we can to survive these times, because better times are ahead.
Got it. Okay, but what was just get a little more granular, like,
yeah,
like where was their drop off? You said you reallocated some of the energy towards Synergy Funding, so that's like another business.
Mm-hmm.
But to start a business, you have to have some capital. So you guys weren't doing bad. You guys were doing okay with the LTL. Everything was still kind of rolling. Like, did the market impact you guys in your niche, I guess is what I'm asking.
Yeah, definitely. Our customers were not shipping as much as they used to ship, right? So it was, that was difficult. The rates went down. I mean, during the peak, the rates were, you know, through the roof, and everybody was making money hand over fist. But then as the market came down, so did the rates. So everybody had an adjustment. But I think for the most part, our carriers understood that this kind of artificial increase that we were experiencing during the peak was just artificial and it was going to come down. So it wasn't a surprise to us. It was just kind of like, welcome back to what's the normal, you know, rates for our industry.
Yeah, yeah, got it. And when did you guys start the factoring company?
So we started the factoring company in 2019.
Okay, 2019. And what was the methodology behind that?
You know, I saw when we originally started, we had a factoring company and they helped us get to a good place. And we left the factoring company and we went to a bank. What I saw as a problem with a lot of factoring companies that were out there, because a lot of them were getting into our industry in the last 10 years, a lot of you know, money has come into our industry trying to finance trucks and stuff. What I saw the opportunity was a factoring company is great to help a carrier get from point A to point B. But sometimes when it comes to point B, the factors are not so friendly about letting them go to the bank, about helping them make that transition to the next stage. They want to keep them. So with our company, our goal when we set out was to have a good factoring company that helps carriers run a good operation.
We are here live at OTR Solutions HQ. I'm here with my partner, Jonathan. Man, listen, factoring is an integral part of the transportation industry. Why is factoring important?
Absolutely, Ramel. In this economy, in this market, cash flow is king. Cash flow is the key to growth. If you have a young trucking company, or if you've been in the industry for years and you want to take that business to the next level, we're absolutely a company that can help. So I hope you'll give us a call today. Let us know what we can do to help you out.
Get the rest and roll with the best. Let's go.
But in the end of the day, it helps them transition to a bank, which is where ultimately I think everybody should be.
Got you. How do you, when you say helps them transition to a bank, how do you do that?
Well, so when you do factor, the factor does have, you know, positions on your UCC filing and so on and so forth. And essentially you've accelerated all of your receivables, right? So when it comes time to transition to a bank, right, you kind of have to make that bridge to get that, go from essentially no term to 30-day term and close on that loan and close with the factoring company to allow the transition to happen. It's important to preach to the carriers that that methodology of stay here and never go anywhere is maybe not the right way.
Mm, got it. So when you say get them to a bank, you mean like the bank extend like a line of credit?
Right.
God, that's the ultimate goal. That in your mind, that should be the ultimate goal for every carrier at some point.
I do think so, yeah. I do think that every carrier should explore all of their opportunities, and eventually when they grow, getting to a bank is a great place to be, and I'm not against that, right?
Right.
So,
and you're a factoring company.
And so. I'm a factoring company, and I'll say that publicly, right? I mean, like, I think our carriers who want to stay with us and it makes sense for them to stay with us, will stay with us, right?
Yeah.
But if you want to go to a bank, it's great to see you grow. You know, it's not like we're going to keep you here forever just because we want the business.
Right. How difficult was it to start a factoring company?
It's difficult.
You have to get funded, obviously. Yep. So did you raise money? How does that work?
Yeah, we raised money. We got to a bank and we got, you know, some money from them and some private investment companies and partners, and off we went.
Got it. You guys are just very ambitious, man, just growing these different verticals. So now Synergy looks like the brokerage, the factoring company, and the warehouse. And is there anything other, are there any other parts of the business that?
No, that's us for right now.
Okay, got it. Tell me what your plans are kind of for the future of Synergy. What are you guys looking to grow into?
So I think we're going to continue to expand the LTL business. We're doing a lot more in the dry world as well. So I can see that business growing and developing. And then Synergy Funding is, you know, going to, I think, organically grow, because a lot of the carriers that do business with us trust us and they want to do their factoring with us.
Got you. So in the LT, so you say you want to go back into dry as well?
We are in dry.
Oh, you are in dry now. Yeah. So you do LTL frozen, you do dry, and what else? Do you do any other niches?
No, that's it. We just basically do a little bit of dry brokerage, you know, kind of like the one pick, one stop stuff, and then we do our frozen LTL.
Okay, got it. Are you able to share what your revenues were last year?
Sure. So for Synergy Logistics, we broke $20 million, right around $25 million, somewhere in between there. And, you know, this year we're going to try to hold that same number and wait for the better days and expand. So,
got it. Typically, what does a brokerage, like, what's the margins look like on a brokerage?
So that's a question that depends on what the broker's doing. If it's just the phone and fax guy downtown, these days, I think it's somewhere between 5 and 10%. I don't know, you know. in the LTL space where you got really good relationships with your carriers and you're able to move the freight, you're probably, you know, closer to 15 right now.
Got it.
At the peak, that was a whole different conversation.
Whole different story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Why do you think that carriers have such a love-hate relationship with the brokers?
Because they don't have a relationship with them.
That's a good answer.
They don't have a relationship with them. You know, that's really it.
I mean, how do you feel about that? Because I mean, I'm sure you hear like the, you know, just to talk, right? Just some of the sentiment out there is like, oh, brokers are ripping us off. And, you know, when you hear stuff like that, like what comes to mind?
You know, it exists out there, right? And it's what ruins our industry. Because a broker has a position and then a carrier has a position. But the minute that the two are trying to demolish each other to win, nobody's going to win.
Mm.
Like I said in the beginning of this conversation, it's all about long-term money here. There's
yeah.
no short-term money. But a lot of the people in our industry, they're short-minded. They're
yeah.
short thinkers. They're just like, hey, how much can I make on this load? If you make great money on this load and that carrier hauls that load and feels like they got the short end of the stick, well, now you lost that carrier for the next load.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. How does someone, let's talk to the carriers now. How does someone vet a good broker or brokerage to work with? What are some of the red flags that they can look at and see and, you know, say, you know what, this may not be a company I want to work with? Or what are some of the things that would make them say, this is a good company to work for? What would you say that is?
So reputation matters, right? And then obviously the tools that are out there for carriers to vet brokers, that matters. But then beyond that, it's the experience, right? So when issues come up, that's when relationships are made.
Mm.
You know, everything looks great on paper when you go ahead and haul the load. But then when there's a detention and we're going to start fighting over $50 or $100, that's kind of when you know whether or not this broker is going to treat you well in the long run.
Right, when something goes wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
You just said there's tools to vet brokers. What are some of the tools that you would suggest or let, you know, people to kind of reference for that?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously there's a whole bunch of online places that carriers can go to see what the reputation scores of brokers are, and then there's, you know, checking on their bond, making sure that they're paying on time and they're treating their carriers well, and networking with other carriers to make sure that they have a good reputation. I think that's what really matters.
Yeah. What do you I know what you're this is a weird question, but double brokering,
yeah,
right? You know, that's a huge problem in this industry. What are your thoughts on that whole thing? Is it something that we can stop? What are the ways we can prevent it? Because, you know, because you're a broker.
Yeah.
Talk to me about you. What are your thoughts on that?
So, you know, double brokering is definitely a problem in our industry, and I think technology is helping a little bit with that. But in the end of the day, I think the only thing that really is going to help you with that is understanding your carrier, making sure that when you're calling your carrier and going, hey, are you hauling this load? There's still a little bit of blindside if you don't know the carrier. You know, if it's a guy that you put your load up on the board and called you don't know if he's actually going to haul or not. Sometimes we see it in the factoring company where we get an invoice for a customer and then we find out that customer is not actually the customer. That guy's a carrier that brokered it to my carrier, right? And off we go trying to figure out how this thing happened, and it sucks because, you know, now you got to go to the customer and say, hey, I know you paid the carrier, but that wasn't the carrier. We're the carrier, and off you go.
Yeah, yeah. How are you guys using technology to advance your business? There's so much, you know, new innovations, AI and so forth. What are you guys doing differently?
So AI is definitely, like, you know, at the forefront of our mind right now with both of our companies. We don't know necessarily how we're going to implement it at a permanent basis because I think it in and itself is developing, but we are using it actively.
Okay.
And it is, I think, really important for everybody to be paying a lot of attention to AI because it's not going away.
That's for sure. What are you using AI for right now?
So we're using AI even for some of our marketing. We're using AI for some of our load planning. We're using AI for some of the way that we communicate with each other. So we're kind of using it in all facets of the business. A lot of our algorithms and stuff that we have in the company, we're testing it with that.
Yeah, so is there any load planning softwares, AI softwares that's pretty interesting out there that you could talk about?
You know what? I don't know of one that I'm particularly fond of just yet,
yeah.
But because a lot of our, you know, I'm still protective of our old ways, per se. I don't want
right.
to just give it all away, but
right.
there's definitely a lot of stuff that I think it can help with. It can definitely help with a lot of the arithmetic. It can help with a lot of the mileage and predictability. And I think eventually, very soon here, we're going to see a software that just works so much better because of it.
Mm. Tell me about a time when your business was struggling, man. Has it always been you know, rainbows and Cheerios, man. tell me about some of the struggles in your business, and just take me back to, you know, one of those days where you thought you weren't going to make it, and kind of how you got out of that situation.
Yeah, you know, it's that day has been more than just one day. That day has been almost at every level of growth. It was in the beginning when 2009 hit and the first freight recession happened. You were sitting there going like, man, you know, the world's coming to an end. And then it would happen again when everything was kind of great. We were making some money. Everybody was comfortable. And then you decided to take the leap to the next level. And then when you were like, oh boy, I'm back in hot water now. You know what I mean? We're scrambling. We're doing this. We're doing that. Why did I make this leap? Everything was okay there. And in those moments, I think what really kind of carried us through it was knowing that there is a better day ahead. The future looks bright. And all we have to do is just continue to push.
Yeah. Is there one particular moment or thing that you could think about when, or maybe a situation that happened that it was like, oh man, this is bad?
Yeah, we had a customer of ours that was a very large customer go out of business. Mm. And they owed us a significant amount of money at the time. And I thought, man, like, there's just no way we'll ever be able to pay this back. We were hauling a good amount of freight for them. The margin was good on it. We were excited. We were young. We thought, man, this is one of the biggest warehouses I think I've ever seen, you know, and how could they ever go out of business, you know?
Right.
And it was just such a pleasure working with them because the rates were good and the service was great. And then one day we just got a letter in the mail that said that the company has been, the bank has taken over the company's operation and we're not authorized to contact any of the customers for payment, and you know it's going to go off to the proceedings or whatnot. And then they swallowed up the whole company, and we never got paid.
Never got paid. This is a well known establishment that everybody
this
knows?
Is.
Are you able to share who it was?
I probably am, but I'm not going to. they got. I'll tell you what happened. They got bought out by another big player in the industry.
Is this a grocer? Food?
No. Logistics and warehousing conglomerate that bought this company in Chicago. Okay. And they were a big operation, you know, just kind of got, what happened was they had defaulted on their loan. So the bank scooped them up, right? Shaved all the unsecured debts that they had, like the brokers and the carriers that they owed money to, and basically said that all of the assets of the company do not fulfill their loan amount, right? So they kind of own it all now. And then eventually brokered it off to another, you know, got gobbled up by another bigger warehouse. And so we never got paid. And in that moment, I remember it was like, how are we ever going to come out of this?
Yeah.
How much did they owe you back? At that time, they owed us about $100,000.
$100,000.
Yeah, which to me was like, you know,
everything.
$100 million right now. I was like, there's just no way we'll ever get
this.
You're
calling
back.
Like, you sure you guys are out of business? Like, there's nobody I could talk to?
We were trying everything we could. And
what year was this?
This was 2010-ish.
2010-ish. All right. So 2010, they owe you $100,000. So how did you guys get out of that? And how much of a hit was that? Because I mean, you're still kind
huge.
Of fairly new to the industry at that point.
Yeah, that was our big customer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That was our like, man, everything's great now. Like we're doing well. And our factoring company actually had warned us about them that, hey, they're getting a little shaky. And we were like, no.
Paying. They weren't paying.
They were a
30 days,
slower,
45
yeah.
days, 90 days, days.
Yeah, something like that. So we pushed back and we were like, no. They're great. They're huge. They're the nicest people you've ever met, right? And they're huge. And how could a warehouse this big tumble, right? And we made an agreement with them that we would accept the liability of the, you know what I mean? That they wouldn't insure the invoices just to continue doing business. And then, boom, it fell. And the only reason we survived it was because of our factoring company. They came to us and I said, listen, this is bad. I mean, you know, you're going to charge us back all these invoices like tomorrow. And so, we worked out a deal.
So they ended up like taking a little bit extra off of the other factored loads and.
Yeah. And then they gave us time. Yeah. They gave us time to pay it back, which is kind of what saved us.
Got it. Wow. That's crazy, man. That's a hell of a hit. So did you ever have any other situations like that or any situations like that coming to where it was like, oh, I'm going to circumvent this because I've been here before.
Yeah.
You know
what I mean? Yeah. Well, we definitely started listening after that.
Right.
But, you know, now we're a lot more cautious. We put a lot more thought and money behind the research that we do into the companies that we do business with to try to make sure that we're going to get paid and, you know, kind of keep the leash a little bit tighter on the payment terms. And, you know, sometimes you got to kind of listen to what the reports are saying out there, even though those reports may be telling you to lose one of your biggest clients that you don't want to do. You know,
what do those reports look like? Like what type of research are you doing to find that kind of information?
So there's a whole bunch of credit reporting softwares out there that you can, you know, subscribe to, that Factors subscribe to, that basically would tell you what other payment terms are coming in at and if anyone's experiencing any slowdown in payment. I mean, the truth is any company that's privately held, kind of nobody knows what's going on behind closed doors. Even if they provide you financials, I mean, that's great, but you still don't know what happened yesterday. You don't know if everybody's still healthy. You don't know if everybody's still getting along. You just don't know, you know? So there's always that risk there, but you try to do what you can.
So what are you looking at? Like aging reports? And you're saying, hey, if it's aging too much, it just tells you that they're not paying their bills on time and there must be some distress going on over there. Is that kind of what
it is?
Well,
that's definitely the first, you know, indicator. I shouldn't say the first indicator, but that's definitely a big indicator. And then, you know, with customers that you hold higher balances with, asking for financials and things like that, that also gives you more insight. And then beyond that, I mean, you just kind of don't know what's going on in the company, you know?
Are you able to, how much information are you able to get? Like,
depending how big their balance is and how much we want to dig into them.
No, but what I'm saying, if you're asking for financials, I mean, they don't have to.
They don't.
So, but you still ask, and it's like, hey, if we want to move forward, we need this stuff to move forward. Is that
you do, and some customers are receptive to it, and some customers are like, no. Mm. You know, like, we're not going to provide you financials to factor our loads.
Got it. What do you think went wrong with Convoy?
That's a very old question. You know, it's an old company. I don't know. Honestly, I've done the homework on it a little bit, but I think there's a lot that we don't know. There's a lot that we don't know there.
I mean, because you're a broker, so mm-hmm. I'm just curious as to what your thoughts is. Like, a company like that with so much money that, you know, they were funded and just kind of going out of business like that, it's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's more to that story. I think there's a little more personal stuff going on in that story. I'm not, you know, privy to, but I think it's really bizarre how the whole thing fell.
What do you think?
I don't know.
What's your, when you say personal, you mean something that was going on like just internally with the ownership?
Or? You know, I think sometimes when there's a lot of challenges in companies, that's where, you know, a lot of the problems that are in relationships that people have come out to the surface, and that causes a lot of turbulence.
Yeah, yeah. What do you think about like a lot of these like, you know, digital freight brokerages that are like kind of emerging now? Everybody's digitizing freight, and that's like kind of like the new thing that everybody wants to do. What is your thoughts on that?
You know, I think that's just how our freight progresses with technology. It's coming. There's a lot of older companies in our industry that do business the old ways, you know, and so technology is kind of getting pushed into our industry, and it's maybe not as receptive with a lot of the older carriers, but it's making its way here.
Got it. What's your thought? Like, do you try to keep, like, is your business more of like the, hey, we're an old school company, man, we want to make sure we know every carrier, and like, or is it like, hey, we're forward thinking, we're in the tech, or is it like a mix of both? Like, I mean,
I'd say we're definitely old school in the sense that we want to know our carriers and have relationships and shake hands. I don't think we'll ever let that go away. But we are definitely very technology focused. We do not want to become outdated. We want to reinvent ourselves. We want to, you know, I don't want to be on the leading edge of technology. I kind of want to be on the bleeding edge of it, right? Like just kind of right behind all the new experiments.
Yeah.
But we're definitely pushing technology on all of our partners.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. What are some of the things that you're proud about that you hear from like your carriers or your customers when you kind of get the feedback? What are some of those things that, you know, make you feel good about the business? Or what are some of the negative things they say, like just transparently? Like, what can you do better at?
So, you know, we can always do better, and I feel like every aspect of our business, there's always room for growth and always room for improvement. We always kind of push on our guys. We have a whole board that we have in our office that's just for ideas to improve, right? And so when I say ideas to improve, there's no idea that's too small. It could be the way where the coat rack is. Let's put it over here because it'll be more convenient for me or whatever, you know? Or it could be completely revamping our software. We have a board, and we just throw things on there. Give me my rule of thumb is give me 5 ways to improve the company every week, every Friday.
I like that.
Yeah, just 5 ways. And it doesn't have to be monumental things. It could literally be, you know, just moving some furniture around or you know, moving a tissue box to the side.
Where'd you get that?
I just thought of it. Honestly, I just thought of it. I was like, you know what? We need to get everybody in the mindset of improving the company. So it's not about having 5 ideas that we accept and are good. It's about having that mindset of like always looking to improve the company.
Got it. So every week there's 5 new ideas that are on the board.
Yeah.
And you said they could be as minuscule as where the paper, toilet paper is.
Yeah,
to as 100%. Large as we need to change this software.
Yes, yes. Got and, it. And it's not that you have to have the solution for the idea, but we want that idea out there, you know, because then everybody will start thinking, all right, changing the software. We did that. We were still running on servers and we pushed ourselves to get off of servers because of that.
Yeah. For sure. Okay, cool. What other, are there any other like entrepreneurial things that you're into? I mean, obviously you started a ton of different businesses. What other interests do you have?
So, you know, for me, freight is definitely my home, right? And I think I'll be here for my career. But there's a lot of other things that I'm curious about, you know, getting more into media and that aspect of it. But I think freight is kind of like, I've been doing it for 17 years and I think I'll do it till the end.
Yeah. What interests you in media? What part of media?
I think our industry is really starting to get big in the media. You know, we weren't a very conversational type of an industry, right? Everybody kind of kept quiet and didn't really advertise much, you know, and I think we're starting to get there.
Yeah. No, I agree. There's definitely been a shift. You know, I came in on probably the beginning of that when we started this podcast, and now it's like everybody's doing some sort of media, which is cool. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
'Cause you get to humanize these businesses, right?
Right.
You get to see like the soul of the business as opposed to just like, you know, we move freight. You know what I mean? It's like, who are the people behind these businesses, right?
Right, right.
Nah, so I think that's really cool. All right, cool.
Even the number of fests, like, you know, your Freight Fest that's coming up.
Oh, we got to plug Freight Fest for sure. The events are definitely crazy. Yeah, Freight Fest, September 26th through 29th. I know you'll be in the building for sure.
Yes,
so,
sir.
Yeah, man. You're right. It's a lot going on, man. It's a very interesting time in this industry. Mm-hmm. What are your projections for 24? I mean, we're already in 24 first quarter. What are you guys seeing? I mean, because are things looking up? Have we hit the bottom? Or is it starting to turn around? What does it look like in your niche?
I think we are near the bottom. I do think that second quarter is going to be a little bit rough, but I do think towards the end of the second quarter, we're going to start coming out.
Why do you think second quarter is going to be rough?
Well, you know how we started off the conversation saying Chicago is kind of the home of freight and all that. Yeah. Well, you know, in Illinois, we're going to have license plates too. And I think that there's a lot of carriers that got into the industry real quick that are not lifers in the industry. And I think we're going to see a lot of them purge out in the spring. Mm. And that will, you know, provide the rest of the guys who are around a better opportunity and maybe an opportunity for the rates to go up. And with everything else, you know, aside, all the politics that are coming up in 24, those things, who knows what's going to happen. But as far as our industry goes, I think we're going to see a uptick, assuming that everything else stays stagnant or stays where it is in the third quarter.
Yeah, like you said, it is an election year, so anything could happen
anything.
When it's an election year. There's always going to be some change, and it could be for the better or for the worse.
Right.
So we don't know exactly how that's going to play out. Anything internationally going on that's impacting your business that you could think of?
Not right now because we're mainly in like the frozen food area.
Right.
But I mean, all that stuff is
so for you. Everything is for the most part domestic.
Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the, you know, like the produce and stuff comes from South America.
Yeah,
and so forth.
Exactly.
But it's all, you know, trade and free flowing.
Yeah, and you guys pull stuff out of Mexico at all?
No, not directly out of Mexico.
Not directly.
No.
Okay. Are you interested in that, like the nearshoring stuff that's going on?
Well, you know, nearshoring, I think, is really starting to become big, especially with employees, like office staff and so on and so forth.
Yep.
So that's definitely something we're looking into. But I like kind of, you know, the team that we've built, I want to look into it to expand on that. But it'll be interesting to see how that develops.
Got it. How big do you think this business could go? Grow to
The freight industry or the nearshoring industry?
No, the freight business.
Oh, our freight business. I'd love to see us at $100 million just in the freight brokerage, and then in the factoring arm. We'll see.
Sky's the limit, right?
Sky's the limit there. Yeah,
I love it. All right, cool, man. Is there anything else that I didn't ask that you'd want to kind of talk about? I think we kind of covered the business for the most part, but I want to make sure that we got everything.
Yeah, I think we did. This was a great conversation.
Okay, cool. I appreciate it. Well, before we go, two things that we have to do. Number one, we have to let people know where they can connect with you directly.
Absolutely.
Like where, you know, LinkedIn or whatever is your best social media. And then also we have to give a final thought, man, for all the entrepreneurs and business owners out there. Just something, some inspiration, man, to leave them with. So first, where can people reach you?
You can reach us on Instagram at the Synergy Logistics or the Synergy Funding. My personal handle is Tim Artem. And we're on LinkedIn as well. Our website's Synergy Logistics LLC, Synergy Funding LLC. You can find us on there, and we'd love to connect with everybody.
Sounds good. And then the final thought, what do you want to leave the audience with?
I think that the final thought for this is the freight's going to be okay. We're going to be okay. We just need a little bit of time to get through this rut. It's a big one, but all those that want to stick around for a long time, there's money in this business. Let's make it.
The industry's not going anywhere, man.
Industry's not going anywhere. It's just got to get through this rut, and you know things are going to get better, and the future looks bright.
That's right. Take it from someone who's been doing this for 17 years, man. Seen peaks and valleys. It's not going anywhere. You know, we're going through a little something right now, but it'll come back around.
That's right.
For sure, for sure. Tim, man, I appreciate you coming out to taking the time to sit with us today, man. It's been a great conversation, man. I appreciate you.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. It's been great.
All right, sir. Hustle fam. You know what we do around this time. If you smell something burning, it's only your desire. We are here with Mr. Tim Artem. Synergy Logistics, Chicago, Illinois. And we are out. All right.
If you twisted, confused, or stuck about trucks, don't be dumb. This is the place to come. Truck and Hustle. Let's go.